Is it the end of the world as we know it, or just a small constitutional crisis that needs to be solved? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principles and Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaelis.
As always, Barry, here from my humble abode fortress where I'm sheltering in place from the onslaught of the horror plague that is sweeping the nation. Oh, wait, it's really not sweeping the nation all that much, and wasn't when we went into quarantine. Never mind.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's any like preludes we need to talk about. We're going to kind of go right into what's going on. Folks, we're seeing some things that are somewhat unprecedented, at least on these shores. And that is the near imminent collapse of pretty much your normal way of doing living and doing business over a microbe. And I'm not trying to make light of anything, Chuck, or to downplay this. I mean, you know, the coronavirus, COVID-19, whatever, novel coronavirus, Wuhan virus, whatever you want to call it. And no, I'm not politically correct. I call it the Wu flu. So
Wuhan flu, yep, baby, it is. It's the Chinese Wuhan flu.
Yeah, I mean, so I'm not going to beat around the bush on that. I'm not trying to make light of it because it's serious. But then again, so is influenza A, influenza B. So are all of the other mostly seasonal viruses that we end up getting hit with annually, and that the government and the health departments come out with the shots, the immunizations, the vaccines, which really don't immunize you. I mean, that's really a horrible word. It doesn't give you immunity. What most of these shots do, especially the flu shot and others, are to help reduce the severity of the symptoms when you do catch the virus that's going around, so that you don't necessarily end up in the hospital. It just so happens that COVID-19 is a little bit more of a pesky critter, and it's one that's a new strain or generation. And so they haven't really figured out a way in order to, you know, through whether it's vaccinations, immunization, whatever you want to call it, through the advent of some drugs to lessen the severity of the symptoms, because they're not eradicating it in any way, shape, or form.
Let's talk about that for a sec.
Please do.
Okay, there was some paranoia among the Hollywood left over the last couple of days, and we're recording this on Thursday, the 19th, March 19th. For instance, we had a Hollywood numbskull by the name of Rosanna Arquette, an actress that would show up when they needed cute and perky, and she's not, you know, she's 60 years old, so she's not cute and perky anymore. So, but she came out and with this weird rant because somebody in Israel that has a connection to the president's son-in-law has been working on a coronavirus vaccine for quite some time. That suddenly it's some kind of weird conspiracy with the president's son-in-law, and it's a Jewish conspiracy. Well, she obviously took it on the chin for that, because first of all, coronaviruses have been around like forever. H1N1 was a coronavirus. SARS was a coronavirus. This new thing is a coronavirus. A lot of flus that are both, you know, very virulent and not so bad are coronaviruses. Not all of them, but the one, and it's called that basically because of the physical structure. You can look around and find a picture of it, and it's got these little fuzzies sticking off. It's a little round ball with fuzzies sticking off. Those are the attachment points, and that actually is what makes it species specific. When that mutates, then suddenly it can jump species and that kind of thing. that's part of it. Now, What I mean by that is I'm looking at a story right now in front of me from a thing. If you know who Cheryl Atkinson is, Cheryl Atkinson is a
is a
former network correspondent who basically has become wakened to the fact that the networks are pushing propaganda. I'm not just talking on this issue, but in general, it's that they are a left wing propaganda machine, and she recognizes that. You know, she's been called all kinds of alt-right and that kind of stuff. And I said, well, I know Cheryl Atkinson. She's not a screaming conservative by any stretch of the imagination. But that being said, she wrote an article. And by the way, the headline says, coronavirus death rate drops. Better math, mm-hmm. better treatment, or more testing. There is actually another possibility, and that is virus mutation, as we talked about last week.
Absolutely.
So
absolutely.
Viruses mutate, and sometimes they become more virulent, and sometimes they become less virulent. And a lot of these coronaviruses, as they jump through their iterations, we already know of at least two strains. Some people are talking 7 or 8 strains now. Why is the coronavirus becoming less deadly? Because it's infecting more people, and that's what happens. That's what happened to the 1918 flu. Remember, we keep comparing this to the 1918 flu, and believe me, it has almost no resemblance at all to the 1918 flu. People would get that and be dead in a couple of days.
Right.
That's not happening here. Kudos to our medical profession and our medical researchers. Part of the reason for that is because we have much better understanding of viruses and much better understanding of epidemiology than we did in 1918 and 19. Thank God for that. I did a remote prayer meeting last night with...
to say against the fact that we do have better technology now. But you're right, and it's not just Cheryl Atkinson who's saying...
Right.
Well, like Cheryl Atkinson's article, Chuck, in dailywire.com today, there's an article... Stanford professor, data indicates we're severely overreacting to coronavirus. And I'll just read the first couple of paragraphs of this article, and then we'll have a link, and so people can go over and read the whole thing for themselves. But it starts, says, in an analysis published Tuesday, Stanford's John P.A. Ioannidis, co-director of the university's Meta Research Innovation Center and professor of medicine, biomedical data science, statistics and epidemiology, and population health, suggests that the response to the coronavirus pandemic may be, quote, a fiasco in the making, unquote, because we are making seismic decisions based on, quote, utterly unreliable, unquote, data. The data we do have, Ioannidis explains, indicates that we are likely severely overreacting.
Well, here's what I would suggest. Go up to the top of Daily Wire of today's.
Yes.
And what does it say? Pelosi says Trump should assume dictatorial powers now.
Well, I think this is going right along with the Democrats' plan. Never take a crisis
to waste. Right.
Never let a crisis go to waste, because it's what has happened here just in the last 24 hours, Chuck, is you've had Hillary Clinton and now a number of state Democrat caucuses are all starting to talk about how we need to go to mail-in or online voting for the fall election, that we can't have in person because, well, you know, the bug. So we have to do it all via electronic means and mail-in voting. And that plays right into their hands because, what's worse than not being able to check somebody to see if they're registered or not is to have dozens and dozens of ballots that are mailed in that could be fraudulent. And I can see where Pelosi's trying to push this on her end to see if they can use it to beat back on Trump and say that, you know, he's overreacting. One way or the other, either he declares martial law, they get him to declare martial law, which I don't think he's going to do in any way, shape, or form, or they get him to not, and then they complain that he's not doing enough and we need to have the elections basically reworked for the fall so that nobody has to show up at a polling place.
Well, I look, with the way that things happened in Ohio with this usurpation by the executive branch through the auspices of the Department of Health, stepped in and changed an election, which is absolutely and positively, without doubt, violation of the tenets of the Constitution. The state constitution requires that the legislature be in charge of all this. What the Ohio Supreme Court should have done, and I'm going to come back to talk to what you're about talking about, but this is our little microcosm here. The fact is that the Supreme Court should have said, you go back right now and you call the legislature into special session. Now.
Yep.
If you want this done, they have to do it. Period.
Correct. Now,
and that didn't happen. The Supreme Court basically said that under the guise of a health crisis that we can talk about what the numbers really indicate. Let's not go there for now. But the fact is that was there an increased risk for the lawmakers? Yeah, maybe. Was it worth having the governor assumed what amounts to dictatorial powers? And the answer is absolutely not. And the same thing here. Nancy Pelosi is suggesting that the man that she allowed to be railroaded in an attempt to remove him from office now says he should declare himself a dictator. Well, Barry, this is getting almost comical.
Yes.
This is looking a lot like Idiocracy, if you know that movie.
Yes, I'm familiar with that. Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, while you're sitting at home, I would suggest you get a copy of Idiocracy and watch it, because what you'll see is essentially a man of below average intelligence is a goof off and gets himself involved in a medical experiment while he's in the army, and he's frozen. And when he's discovered and brought back out, it's years and years and years, decades and decades and decades later, basically the world is run by complete idiots, and he has to deal with that. It's a case where in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king. He's the smartest guy in the world, and this was a guy who was really stupid when he went into being frozen. So, but we have this going on, Barry, and we need to get to kind of go back to this. We cannot allow a virus to undermine our liberty. Now, do I mind? Should something be done about quarantining? Well, probably. Now, let's put it this way. In the old days, many of our parents, my parents, this hasn't happened in a while since the advent of antibiotics and better medical treatment.
Right.
But if you got diphtheria or measles or things like that, the health department, the local health department would come along. The doctor we're still making house calls, and the doctor would, on his own authority, quarantine your house. He didn't quarantine your whole neighborhood. He didn't quarantine your city.
Right.
He didn't quarantine your state. He didn't quarantine your country. He didn't close borders with Canada and Mexico and close all customs intakes. What he did was he quarantined a single house. And he said, you can't come in, you can't come out until this has passed.
Right.
Now people could come to the door and bring them food and groceries and that kind of thing.
But, sure.
But generally speaking, when you got a quarantine, it was an individual residence. Should that still be happening with people who have the virus? Yeah. Go home. Stay home. And if we have to, we'll post an armed guard out front of your door. Because that's been one of the problems. People have been exposed and closely exposed. Like the guy in Missouri whose daughter got it. And he took his other daughter to a father-daughter dance after he was told to self-quarantine. I mean, that's just stupidity.
Well, it is, but, you know, I would have to say that you know, first of all, A, nobody around me has it, so it's good.
Yes.
Secondly, if I was quarantined, I couldn't get out anyway because I don't have a T-Rex costume. I suppose you saw that somebody, I think it was in Spain, was under a quarantine, and they tried to sneak away by dressing up in a Tyrannosaurus Rex costume and walking out the front door. Like, somehow that wasn't going to trigger suspicions that maybe something was going on.
I'm going back to Idiocracy.
Yes, absolutely. Oh my! Well, you know, even in the midst of chaos and this kind of stuff, at least we can laugh a little bit. So.
Yeah. No, I hadn't heard that but that's a new one.
And as we speak every day, both at the federal level and here in Ohio, you have press briefings. Matter of fact, I think the president's doing one right now as we're recording this, so we can't kind of break away and hear what they're talking about. But we kind of figured the markets are having trouble. You know, obviously this has gone far enough that it's having some significant impacts when you've got airlines, travel agencies, hotels, resort areas are shutting down. You know, Disney shut down all of their
theme parks. Yeah.
Again, and supposedly all of these are temporary closures, but for some, and possibly sadly many.
Yeah,
small businesses and others. These may be permanent closures because sometimes you cannot take a hit of a week or 2 weeks or a month or an indefinite amount of time of not having productive income coming in and selling product or serving food or what it might
be. Barry, the rent is still due
because. The bills are still coming due. Your rent, your utilities, your equipment, probably your mortgages, your business loans. Now, I understood that there was something that was possibly going to come up today at the federal level that the president's probably asking mortgage lenders and banks to
suspend,
forego foreclosuring on anybody. You're basically deferring. Mortgage payments and things of that nature for a bit of a time here. But honestly, I'm not so sure that doesn't just create a back-end buildup that will cause a larger economic disruption on the back end when all that comes due.
Here's what I can see happening. It's either, in some cases, debt repudiation or complete chaos. Please don't take my words as being go run up your credit card to the max and so that everybody will will go back to zero and start from scratch. The markets are down because they can see the same thing that you and I can see. They can see that there is going to be when everything tries to crank back up, there's going to be a whole lot of, for instance, restaurants and bars who are basically family owned and they're hanging on by their fingertips.
Right.
Margins have to be low. Anybody that's been out recently, since some of the healthcare issues that we've created by requiring, Obamacare requiring healthcare plans and things, and minimum wages being raised. Remember, folks, I don't mind people being paid what they earn, but. Giving a 16-year-old $15 an hour to flip burgers out at Wendy's or Burger King or McDonald's is the height of, again, idiocracy because those are entry-level jobs. And what you've basically done is you've created an economy where you need fewer people. Why? They put in kiosks so that they can take your order. And in many cases, they've created places like McDonald's that have one person standing up front to give you your meal after you've ordered it on the kiosk, and there's a couple of assistant managers in the back flipping burgers. Now, with some of these mom-and-pop restaurants and bars and gathering, and for instance, gyms, there are gyms that are doing okay, but they're not now because people aren't... If I can't come to the gym, I'm not making the monthly payment.
Right.
That would be stupid. So what does that do? Well, that puts those people, A, the instructors and the aerobics instructors and the people that run the bicycle classes and all that stuff out of business unless they're doing things like this new, you know, some of these new online things. And you could see an explosion of that. Listen, if you're smart, you'll get involved in that if you do that kind of thing and you're out of work now. You'll see how you can get involved in some of these online, we call them narcissism machines, where they have a big mirror that hang, it's called the mirror, I think, that you hang up in your exercise area, and they have someone who stands there and says, you're doing a good job, or you need to lower your shoulder, or, you know, gives you some advice on doing it the right way. That kind of thing can boom. So we're in a changing area, so we need to think, you know, God's very clear that things that worked 20 years ago don't work now. Remember, Barry, that, you know, when you wanted something, you went down to Target or you went down to Walmart or you went blah, 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 and if they had it, they had it, and if they didn't, then you were kind of stuck. You had to order it and wait 6 weeks. Now what do? Well, Amazon's hiring 100,000 people nationwide because they've got such demand. People aren't going into Walmart. They're not going into Target. They're not going into these places. They're not, you know, even Big Lots is feeling the pinch. Now, if they've got toilet paper, they'll have people running into the doors, believe me.
Absolutely.
Jenny and I tried to order some toilet paper from Amazon. Now, my UPS man came in. You know, I'm in a business where I ship UPS rather regularly. My UPS man came in a tizzy on Monday because he'd been doing nothing but delivering toilet paper from Amazon.
Yeah.
Now, and Tuesday he comes in and he goes, there aren't any more toilet paper rolls being delivered today. I said, Chuck, that's because they're out. They don't have any. Jenny and I tried to order some. Will be shipped April 16th.
Oh, good.
Well, okay, I guess we better start saving magazines. I don't know what else to do. We've got enough, but hopefully this trend will go away. But the economy's changing. Wall Street sees that, and that can be good or bad. That means a lot of big companies are going to hear the death knell. Some of them have been hanging on barely. Some of the places that haven't really gotten up to speed on going mail order type, like Amazon. They could be done because people aren't going in. That's why the market's so jittery. Nobody knows for sure how this is all going to play out. And it's being done on the basis of some really bad calculations, I think. Now, does anybody want Uncle Fred to contract the virus because, you know, he's had COPD for years and it may kill him because there aren't enough respirators out there?
Right, correct.
And nobody wants that. But at what point do you trade your liberty so that Aunt Fred or Uncle Fred won't get a virus?
Well, you know, and it's a very interesting question. You've said a few things here that have brought up a number of different little bon mots that I have I've been sourcing, for research on this. And I'm going to go backwards because I'm going to talk about what you just said first, which is this whole idea with there aren't enough respirators. And honestly, Chuck, that there is some truth to that. A respirator is a fairly, involved
medical device.
It's a
complex device, yeah. Yep.
That would, allows you to help breathe when you can't breathe on your own or your lungs are compromised, et cetera, or you're in a coma or things of that nature. And, you know, that's been a problem. And, of course, worldwide we've seen where there have been shortages of available respirators, and it takes some time to make these things, to build them up, and sometimes you've got them and they break. Well, that happened in Italy, Chuck. You had a situation at a hospital where they had, obviously a huge spike in demand for respirators based upon the earlier phase of the Wuhan virus coming into Italy and hitting them pretty hard. because of, you know, their healthcare system is a nationalized one. It's socialistic. Some of their, you know, habits and behaviors are different than what we do. You know, we're trying not to shake hands and using hand sanitizer. Well, a lot of times Italians kiss each other on the cheeks when
they're
very
hands-on. They're very hands-on, very demonstrative people. Yeah.
Yeah, they're very demonstrative people. So the social distancing thing was kind of, you know, already defeated before it ever got there. But so at this one hospital, they had a respirator that a part had broken. So it's out of commission. So they contact the company that manufactured it. Well, the company could get them a part. It's going to cost them $11,000. And the company wouldn't be able to get the part to them for a couple, 3 weeks. Okay? So what happened? Well, one of the heads of the hospital got together with a newspaper editor. And they started digging around and they found an engineer who had a 3D printer. They took him the broken part, he sketched it out, figured it out, printed it on a 3D printer, they put it into the respirator, and it worked. Moral of the story? The company that makes the respirators is planning on suing the engineer for millions of dollars for violating their patent.
Yeah. See, this is the kind of silly, again, idiocracy strikes.
Exactly.
The idiocracy, you know why? Because they said, well, you've set the precedent. That's not the way this works. We're in a national emergency. They need the part now.
Right. And the company refused to to share their blueprints so they could, because that was their first idea, was can we get the blueprint so we can take this to somebody who can, you know, manufacture the part. Like, they were just looking at actually physically manufacturing
the part. Right, having it fabricated. Yeah.
Didn't happen, but then they start talking to this engineer, and he's like, I've got a commercial 3D printer. Give me the part. I'm an engineer. I can draft the specifics of it. I could probably program it and do the part in a few hours. Bam. Did it. Got it in there. It worked. Lives are being saved. Dozens of lives have been saved already with that same respirator that would have been out of commission for weeks. But yet the company that holds the patent on the respirator is screaming about how, you know, they're going to sue this poor guy whose voluntary efforts in working in community with the media, which is the newspaper editor, and the hospital, the healthcare area, helped save people's lives.
You know what? Now, this is a place where I think the president could step in and with the approval of Congress. You don't have to write a law, but he could write an executive order that says, until this crisis is over, all these patent battles are suspended.
Well, yeah, there would be that as well. So that's that part. So we've got that piece floating out there. And, of course, that's over in Italy, so you know, it can't happen here. Well, actually, it can happen here, and it might before this thing's all said and done. Another piece that, you know, we talked about was this whole idea of, you know, how the healthcare system is being pushed here in Ohio, or is planned on being pushed. Now, if you listen to our director of the Department of Health, Dr. Amy Acton, who was a pick by Governor Mike DeWine when he, put her in as the health director, you'd think she'd have a background in these things. But yesterday they had the press conference that they normally have, the daily 2 o'clock, what I call the totalitarian 2 o'clock time, where basically she was asked some questions of the media. The question she was asked is, well, as far as testing for this virus, what type of tests are we using? You know, because there are different types. There's genotype testing. There's all different types of macrophage testing, you name it.
Right.
She didn't know. She wasn't sure. And she answered it with a non-answer that basically was trying to deflect the question. This is the head of our response to COVID-19, who the governor has now, since he declared an emergency, everything that's coming out of the health department, all the shutdowns of businesses, all of the now they're telling, you know, you can't have elective surgeries, oh, unless it's an abortion, which I'll talk about that in a minute.
Oh, really? That's a new one.
So you can't have elective surgeries, and then like dentists and veterinarians are supposed to willfully surrender all of their personal protective equipment, masks, latex gloves, etc., back to the State Department of Health so that they can reallocate them to the frontline hospitals that I'm assuming, Chuck, they're planning on being overrun because, well, the director has come out at least a couple times and said, A, that 40% of the entire Ohio population will contract this virus, which, you know, at 11 million people, that's about 5 million of
us. 4.4 million,
and 100,000 people will die.
Which is now, way Chuck, more than that. Yeah.
I mean, I haven't seen today's numbers yet. But the last I saw, we were under 150 people who had actually tested positive for the coronavirus. We were still under 20 that are hospitalized.
Yeah. We need to let's go into the statistics just briefly.
Yes, please.
Those numbers don't make any sense. First of all, the infection rate around the world is not 40%. It's not any place.
Except
in places where people are crammed together and not allowed to move around. In other words, like in retirement centers and that kind of thing, where people are basically holed up. People aren't allowed to go in and visit their relatives who are in these retirement, you know, communities and in nursing homes. Okay. 40% would mean that we've got about 4.4 million people who would get it. That 100,000 number is nothing like reality for death. It's nowhere close to reality. The current death rate is about something between 0.02% and 0.04%.
Right.
That means, if let's say 0.04 to be conservative, that means about 4,400 people would die in the state. You know what? That's just a little over normal for the flu season.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, they said, that, what, was it during last flu season, how many people died in this country?
It was a lot. It was over 100,000 people, I think.
Well, it was over 100,000 people. It was 12,000 in Ohio.
Yeah. I'm going to take it back.
You look at your 4,000 number, it's about a third.
Yeah. These numbers don't make this is the worst kind of fear mongering, and it's really I'm going to be paranoid right up front. This is a power grab, and the only way to do a power grab is to scare the snot out of people so that they're willing to give up their freedom to save their lives. And the fact is, folks, most of you out there listening are not in danger of getting much more than a very uncomfortable case of the flu with a runny nose and a sore throat. If you are in a special class of people who have pre-existing health conditions, if you're over 60, if you're over 60 with diabetes or COPD or cystic fibrosis or any number of other breathing issues, susceptible to bronchitis and pneumonia, you could be in more danger. But for the rest of us, I mean, I'm over 60 and I am diabetic, but I have extremely good health otherwise. I get the flu about once every 5 years. I had a little bit of a cold really early this winter, and that's it. Most of you are perfectly safe. You're really, really safe with the current situation because you're not supposed to go anyplace. A lot of you aren't going to work. A lot of you aren't going to the store. You know, one of the things that's happening is in this changing economy thing that we've talked about, places like Kroger's and Walmart and places that sell groceries, Giant Eagle, that kind of thing, they got people scrambling to pick orders that people are picking up. I was in a Kroger's the other day looking for some cleaning products and also for some baby items, you know, baby wipes and that kind of thing, which are gone. You can't buy those. The place, there were pickers in every aisle, picking multiple orders at once.
Mm-hmm. Sure they
so,
were.
So, statistically speaking, let's go back to that. The numbers that the head of the Ohio Department of Health are quoting are utter nonsense. Utter nonsense. This is a backtrack, by the way, of what she originally said, which was that she thought 100,000 people already had it. Well, let me tell you something. Most people that get this, A, there's a statistical lie in here in that, like, for instance, New York City's numbers jumped by almost 300 in one day. Do you know why? More people got tested. More test kits became available. Well, that's bound to spike your numbers. It's bound to because there a huge percent of people that have this thing will never be diagnosed because they don't get really sick, they don't go to the emergency room, and therefore they don't get the test. Meanwhile, as they get it, the virus is becoming less and less and less virulent because it's mutating.
Which all viruses do.
Which all viruses do. All of them. The more they infect, the more they mutate. It's just a fact of life. This is why you can't when, oh, we've got X number of cases that just popped up. Of course you did, because you tested them. That's the rub. Again, there are people out there, that most people that have this virus will never be tested. And will never know they had it.
Probably not. Well, you know, it's basically a fact that you never know exactly to what, how deep and wide an extent a disease runs until a couple of years after it's all over with because of the data collection lag, where they start figuring these things out. So there's that to play with. Now, the other side of this coin, and this is another thing you brought up earlier, is that by the calling of a health emergency in Ohio, the governor has basically started utilizing authority and powers under these health emergencies to do various things, you know, ordering, you know, various entities. Now, I think like only five BMVs in the state are open right now. The rest of them, you know, you have to order a call in or mail in or go online. And if you have to renew your driver's license or renew your, see, I'm not sure what they're going to do for people who have more than just a sticker to renew. Like I did this year, I had to go in and get the photo ID.
Yep.
But, I'm going to figure out how that's going to work. And I guess supposedly if you're online and you've got access to a camera on your laptop or something like that, you can do your photo that way, maybe. But they'll figure all that out. But one of the things that he just did was he first, you know, they come out and said, oh, you know, everything's going to be great. We're going to have elections on Tuesday, yada, yada, yada. You know, we'll take precautions. We'll allow curbside voting where a poll worker comes out and brings a ballot out to somebody who doesn't want to come in because they're worried about, you know, an older person maybe who's worried about, you know, potentially being exposed to, you know, somebody who might be carrying the virus. This is all based on a lot of hypotheticals and what ifs, Chuck. That's just kind of been the scary thing about this is that, you know, it's all hypothetical and what if. And I guess, you know, that when somebody actually does start showing symptoms, then the what ifs are somewhat over with. But then again, like you said, the results are not nearly as, you know, immediately life-threatening as it was with something like the Spanish flu. So anyhow, but by that afternoon, on Monday afternoon, they're rolling out and saying, well, we know we're going to get sued, and we're directing, the Secretary of State's going to direct his attorney, the Attorney General, not to contest the suit. And the suit was basically saying, postpone the elections, don't open the polling places, because older people who are the poll workers and people who you normally don't, you know, do early voting, which are oftentimes older people, will be put in dire threat of their lives to come vote. And so, therefore, we got to shut it down. And what they believed was they'll send it to court here in Franklin County in Columbus, and everything will be great. The judge will agree with them, and they won't challenge it. So, therefore, they can throw up their hands and say, hey, the court ordered us not to have elections. Didn't work that way.
No.
Judge Richard Fry, the Franklin County Common Pleas Court, took a look at it and said, first of all, I don't have the authority to give this to you because, B, you don't have the authority to take it.
Right.
It isn't your purview to set or reset an election date. It's the purview of the Ohio General Assembly. And you're right from earlier, what they should have done was the governor has the authority to direct that the General Assembly reconvene when they're on break or recess, which they are right now. You know, they've taken a recess for a little bit. And that he could have called the men to reconvene in order to give them the authority to move that date and to put it at June 2nd or wherever they all decided it wanted, it could have gone, and set the parameters and the type of ways that we're going to handle things like the absentee ballots that have already been cast, the provisional balloting, the military ballots, which may or may not already be in through the mail, but they may and or may be still coming in, and whether or not from the time of the 17th on Tuesday till whenever they set the new date, do they have to recycle everything? Can you just go get an absentee ballot and vote it? Or is there going to have to be some changes made on the ballot as far as, you know, qualifying it to be legitimate? These are things that the assembly has to be the one to answer.
Yeah.
Because no law can be unilaterally changed, even in a time of emergency, except by the General Assembly. That's Article 18 of our Ohio Constitution's Bill of Rights. You can't suspend the law unless you're the General Assembly.
Right.
This only the law's in place, they're the only ones who can do it. Well, what the governor did by fiat, they didn't get it from the judge. So he turns around and has the health director issue an order closing all the polling locations, thus effectively canceling the election day.
Well,
because nobody could get access to go vote.
Yeah, here's a tenet of this that I'm sure the governor never even thought of. Ohio voting rights groups say registration deadline must move with the changed date of voting.
Oh, of course they do, because then they get to register a bunch of people. Yeah, this is wrong. I mean, this is why you run into this kind of problem when you basically ignore the law. Rule of law.
The rule of law
has been ignored by this governor. He's violated both the Ohio Constitution in Section 18 of our Bill of Rights, and he's also violated Article 2, Section 21, which basically rests the entire sole power and authority, the reserved power for setting a date and place and time of elections, to the Ohio General Assembly. Because this is the kind of thing you run into. Now these groups, the Democrats are now suing. And, of course, with all their liberal groups, and yes, they want to have more time to register people. Chuck, this is going to create, this is constitutional chaos. Well, the General Assembly is going to be meeting next week in order to answer these questions. And the question, though, remains now is, will the governor, under his emergency powers that he is exercising right now with the state of emergency for the coronavirus pandemic... Well, and I'm not calling this a pandemic because I don't think it's actually a pandemic in Ohio just yet. I frankly think it's kind of overkill. But the question is, will he utilize these powers to say that since he's called that no more than 10 people can congregate in a group at a time because of this epidemic, is he going to say that the assembly is illegally assembling next week when the 99 members of the House and the 33 members of the Senate go into their collective chambers in order to deal with this constitutional crisis? He could very well do that. I think he would be completely insane to do it, and it would probably end up, as I understand it from hearing from a number of folks, that there are already members of the assembly who have had drafted articles of impeachment against the governor should he try something like this. So you're looking at some constitutional brinksmanship that's going on right now, Chuck, in our state over this, but I fully strongly believe that when the assembly meets next week, they're going to reset the dates. They're probably not going to open back up the registration, but they're going to set the date, and they're probably going to say, okay, we're either going to do 30 days of you mail in a ballot and then the window closes and that's it, or they're going to say this is the new date for the in-person elections and we're not going to do absentees. The absentee window closed, and if you didn't vote, you need to come to the polls on this day. It's going to be interesting to see what happens, but when it gets right down to it, it would be very, very, I think, troubling if the governor were to try to keep the assembly from meeting. And I believe that whatever they pass, he's going to probably need to go ahead and sign, even if it limits his authority, because him vetoing that would definitely set up another constitutional crisis where the assembly would probably come back in, override his veto, and then you're looking at a governor who's in the middle of a term who has lost the confidence of the assembly for anything that he's wanting to do. And between you and me, Chuck, I can see then this governor taking a knee-jerk response to try to, by executive order under the Emergency Health Powers Authority, do what some mayors and other leaders and governors in other states are trying to do, which is curtail your Second Amendment rights.
Yeah, I have a feeling that would be a very definite exploding cigar. This whole thing is full of, it's essentially an El Producto case. Remember the old cigar boxes when you were a kid? It's a little El Producto cigar box, and every one of them is an exploding cigar for somebody.
Yes.
Because for some reason, here's what I think, in the panic, everybody is happy that somebody's doing something. They're not sure if they're doing the right thing or not. All they know is they've been told that, like we talk about in the middle of the winter, the screaming white death is coming, and that's why everybody goes out and buys all the milk and bread. This is one of those cases we have this virus that can kill us all, except that it can't, and somebody's doing something. Now, once the panic is gone and people see what has been done, you might get a different reaction. But in the middle of it right now, we're going to have to take measured responses. And the legislature, really, let's talk about this realistically. Had DeWine called them back into special session, it's odds on that they would have said, Governor, you're right, we're going to move that date. And when the legislature says that, they would have very likely, I would say somewhere between odds-on favorite and metaphysical certitude, have given him the dates. I don't know necessarily they'd have given him a June 2nd date. They probably would have gone into May, the normal voting date, which would have been May 7th, I think. But who knows? We'll never know because he didn't do it the legal way. But had he called them back in, they would have given him what he wanted regarding the voting. And they would have done it right because they would have reset the registration dates, as we talked about earlier. They would have set all the election laws. What they probably would have done, there's language in there that basically says 30 days before the set date, I think, is the registration deadline. Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, the window closes 30 days prior to the date of the election, yes.
And so if they set it at May 7th, it would have been April 7th, or thereabouts. I don't have a calendar in front of me, but that's what would have happened. But he didn't allow that mechanism to take place. He just grabbed the power. This is the problem we're in here. Governors aren't dictators, and they can't take dictatorial authority. If a plane crashes into the state house and kills all the representatives and the governor survives, well, he has to be the caretaker for a while, and he has to call an immediate new election so we have new representatives. But he didn't do that. And he didn't have that problem on his hands. This is not one of those places. And that's the problem we're running into, Barry.
You're right. We're not there, and let's hope we never get there. But one of the things the governor can and possibly should be doing right now, as you know, yesterday, we recorded this on Thursday. On Wednesday, the governor came out, and as part of his rolling out of various things that they're looking at doing to stem the pandemic, is that he asked that elective surgeries be postponed, i.e. if you have a hip or joint replacement or some other surgery that's not life endangering or doesn't lead to the worsening of symptoms that lead to endangering your life, then they're asking the hospitals and doctor's offices to push those back a while, a few weeks at least, as they can do, in order to basically free up the bed space that they fear that they might need if Dr. Acton's extreme overreactive numbers that she's throwing out there almost every day come to pass. But the one problem is that scenario is that there is one area that wants to be treated like they're part of the health system who is completely ignoring the governor's situation there. And we know because we're out there watching it, and that is the abortion facilities, Chuck. They are still continuing on full bore doing elective surgeries, abortions, in basically just ignoring the governor's request that the medical community and I know it's hard for me to even consider an abortionist to be part of the medical community because they're violating the Hippocratic Oath every time they practice their preferred means of making their money. But if that's the case, then we're calling on the governor and the Department of Health to clarify this order, to basically say specifically that this order includes the suspension of chemical and surgical abortions in the state. Because if it's a situation like, say, maybe with an ectopic pregnancy or a definite threat to the life of the mother, then the hospitals can take care of that as well. They should be taking care of it. That shouldn't be ever done in an abortionist abattoir in some of the facilities that they put up, because as you've seen from Gosnell and others, when they go into these facilities are not exactly what you would consider your paragons of germ and virus-free environments. So therefore, we're calling on the governor, who says he's pro-life, to act like it, to basically tell these facilities, if you're going to shut down a restaurant and say that they can't do anything, then you need to shut down these clinics. You need to shut down the Planned Parenthoods and the preterms and the women's med centers, and basically tell them that they're under an order that they can't perform abortions. Now, if they want to do, Planned Parenthood tries to do this thing like, you know, abortions are only a small part of what they do, but they do so much good health care for women. Well, they can continue to do that good health care. They just can't do the abortions, period, whether it's chemical or surgical. And so we're pushing on the governor right now to get him to come out and clarify this. And we hope that he does, because we're seeing, like in Massachusetts, when they made that same order here just a couple of days ago, they specifically exempted abortion facilities from falling under that and basically gave them the green light to go ahead and kill babies day after day, even during a health emergency.
Well,
it's absolutely ridiculous. It's counterintuitive. It's counter to the whole idea of we're trying to protect people's health. And honestly, let's just put it this way. We don't have the data to show surgical abortion procedure that her health status isn't in danger to the point where she becomes the high-risk category for contracting coronavirus. It's ridiculous. I mean, at the very least, be consistent in what you're trying to do, Ohio Department of Health, and make this a non-functioning entity as well.
Well, just remember, Dr. Acton is a pro-abort.
Yeah, and that's the other, that's the dirty little other side of this coin, is that Amy Acton has spent a lot of time as an Obama organizer. Yeah, I tell you, Mike DeWine and his folks who vetted their people they put in the cabinet need to kind of, I guess, issue an apology to most of Ohio. But basically, she's an Obama organizer in 2008. She's a Democrat, and when she was at the Columbus Foundation, she wrote grants for both Planned Parenthood and NARAL. It's just flabbergasting to see a supposedly pro-life governor who picks a pro-abort activist to be his director of Department of Health and then hands her nigh unlimited powers by declaring a health emergency.
That being said, we're dealing with this, but you have to remember too, Barry, one thing we try to reiterate here, this is worldview issue. Remember, we're coming at this from a Christian worldview. The fact is that abortion is a sacrament in the religion of worship of self and worship of the government.
Yes.
Where Caesar is Lord, abortion is a sacrament, and therefore it must stand. It's sort of like, the way they view it is, if someone came in and said, you can't do communion on Sunday, which is one of the reasons why, by the way, churches are exempted from this 50 persons or less.
Yes.
There's a First Amendment issue. And that is,
yes, there's a big one.
Now, a lot of churches like mine have chosen to, because we have had people who have had some of the symptoms, they're not tested, and so we don't know for sure, but they've been very sick. Honestly, in the interest of caution, the other elders and I decided that we would close and that we would do an online service, a truncated online service. There are ways to do that. We talked about basically doing a hymn sing and all that, and nobody felt confident enough to sing on.
I get that.
We do have some lovely singers in our congregation, and I'm not one of them. My wife, who is one of the lovely singers in our congregation, somebody asked me about joining the choir, and she looked at him and shook her head no. Said, yeah, that's she's wise. But that being said, this would be like coming in and telling a church that they're no longer allowed to give communion. This is how it's viewed in the church of self. I want the right to have my abortion. I want the right to have my marijuana. It's my body. I can do with it what I please, forgetting that actually you are gods and gods alone. And he has essentially said, no, you can't do anything you want with your body. That's where the rubber meets the road. And that's one of the reasons that when we have people who don't want to argue from that standpoint, they forget all the presuppositions, Barry. They want to surrender that presupposition and argue it from a health standpoint. That's why I'm a presuppositionalist. No, God owns us. And God has the right to tell us what we can and cannot do. And that reflects out onto the state at a limited level. That's why the state can hand out death penalties. That's why the state can decide on any number of things. And one of the things they're not allowed to decide on is that you can do an unrestricted abortion. That is a violation of God's liberty to act. I don't know how else to put it. But
that's the best way to do it.
Yeah, that we're living in an age where people have forgotten that, and they don't like it because nobody likes to be told what to do. Barry, I'm chief among them. I especially don't like the state telling me what I can do and can't do.
Well, right, absolutely.
But I understand in certain circumstances that for the good of society, there are certain things. I can't carry a pistol into a movie theater, and when something exciting happens, I can't fire my pistol into the ceiling.
Right.
That's forbidden, and for good reason. Now, if I want to do it out here, as if my neighbors are far enough away and I shoot up into the air and nothing bad happens, yeah, okay. But even that's a bad idea, and I'm aware of that. Self-governance is the basis for liberty. And what we have going on here is are people saying, well, you're too stupid to self-govern. Now, there are some people, again, idiocracy. There are some people that are too stupid to self-govern. Does that mean we're all too stupid to self-govern? No, of course not. There are a number of us who are smart, and if somebody around us is sick, we say, okay, I'm quarantined. That's it. I'm not going to jeopardize you for my own purposes. Period.
Yep.
And that's where we are. Wrapping up in the next 3 minutes that we got left, more or less, by the time this is edited properly, let's just get it all out. Folks, we have an unprecedented power grab going on. And don't be cowed, because it could be a little more dangerous than usual. Be wise, but don't be cowed. Know your rights. Look, get a hold of your state rep and say, look, you can't let the governor do this. I want you involved in this process, and I don't want him to have dictatorial power. That's what we need to relay to these guys. And
yeah, don't expect that they're just going to know this by default, because it's an awful lot of pressure when the titular head of your own party is pulling these little stunts.
Right. And that's the problem with having the governor also be the head of a party. To show loyalty, a lot of times the legislators will kowtow. And then what can happen is, this is the dirty little secret. What can happen is they'll give him all the rope he needs to hang himself if they don't like him. But what that does is, once you give him that rope, the next guy who steps in has that rope.
That's right.
Unless you pull it back.
And can hang you with it.
And exactly. And that's what will happen. So we need to put a handle on this, or to put stoppers on it, so that the next governor can't come in and say, well, I'm going to ban gun sales because there's a health emergency. I want you to show me where somebody is using a pistol to go in and rob a store of a new shipment of baby wipes or toilet paper.
Gee, I don't give them ideas. Well, we're already seeing enough of that going on.
We live in an age when that could happen. And
yes, we do.
That's all the more reason why you shouldn't let the guns be taken away, because you need one. My wife doesn't like going out right now. Unless she's packing, or she really wants me to go with her, because I carry one when I'm out. And she wants me to go, and I'm like, I'm perfectly willing, because I don't want to see something bad happen. You never know when somebody says, hey, you got an 18 pack of toilet paper, give it to me.
Yeah, well, that would be absolutely asinine, but yeah, okay, I get it.
Yeah. So, that being said, you know, ladies and gentlemen, be vigilant, but don't be cowed. Be careful. Do take precautions if you go out. If you don't have any access to hand sanitizer, you can make it. Look on the internet. There are formulas for using hand lotion and isopropyl alcohol. Go find it. That's really not that hard. It's really easy to make. That being said, we're out of time. You know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.